I want anybody from Myanmar to know that they're welcome in our community.
Rohingya refugees find challenges even after relocation. It's Monday, October 9th. This is VOA Asia. Hello and welcome. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us too on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, thousands of guns surrendered in Australia, Vietnamese refugees caught in U.S. gunfire, China's professional basketball league plays the NBA, robots making sculptures, and people making lifelike eyes. It's all on today's VOA Asia. More than 500,000 Muslim Rohingya have fled persecution in Myanmar into Bangladesh in recent months. Some could end up as refugees resettled abroad, like earlier waves of Rohingya who had fled. VOA's Kane Farabaugh visited Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's one of the largest Burmese communities in America, where more than 150 Rohingya families have resettled in recent years. He found tensions between groups continue, even in their new home.
It is the death and destruction she witnessed in her village in the Rakhine state of Myanmar that haunts Rohingya refugee Bibiyashi Mohammed Tahir.
They shot and killed people. They burned down everything. We had no place to stay. They laid down broken glasses, wires on the roads. They held people at gunpoint.
Tahir and her family fled Myanmar, arriving in Malaysia before reaching the U.S. in 2014. But instead of landing in Chicago or Milwaukee, two cities home to a large number of Rohingya, Tahir and her family instead arrived in Fort Wayne, Indiana, becoming one of the first Rohingya families in the area. Today, Burmese community members believe there are more than 150 Rohingya families in Fort Wayne. And although their numbers are growing, their community remains a small fraction of the more than 6,000 Burmese living in the city. Most speak a different language and practice different religions than the Rohingya.
Most of them are, I think almost 100% they are Muslims. Not Buddhists, not Christians.
Abraham Tang, a leader in the Burmese Chin community in Fort Wayne and pastor at the Myanmar Indigenous Christian Church, expresses many of the same resentments Rohingya face in Myanmar.
My opinion is rather than sending Rohingya to Fort Wayne and not sending here is better. No, don't send Rohingya to Fort Wayne.
That's unfortunate because I want anybody from Myanmar to know that they're welcome in our community.
Tom Henry is Fort Wayne's mayor and has made Burmese integration into life in this city of more than 250,000 a priority of his administration.
We try to pride ourselves in being a welcoming community, inclusive community, a community that allows people to assimilate throughout our community. And if they want to ultimately become an American citizen, we've got the tools in place to help that happen.
But some community members like Abraham Tang worry that an increasing number of new arrivals could fuel tensions.
I foresee the Burmese people and the Rohingya people in the future, sooner or later, we will have conflict. That's not good for us. The Fort Wayne community.
I don't see that happening. We have a very safe community.
The Rohingya refugees in Fort Wayne that agreed to speak to VOA insist they do not believe they have been marginalized or persecuted by other Burmese in the area and have so far been welcomed and assisted in their resettlement. Although she now feels safer, Bibiyashi Mohammed Tahir is still adjusting to her new life in America and wonders when she'll finally feel settled.
We couldn't find peace in our own country. How could we find peace here?
While peace might remain elusive, she may soon find comfort among an increasing number of familiar faces as more than 400,000 Rohingya search for new homes away from the violence that continues to plague Myanmar. Kane Farabaugh, VOA News, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
For the Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh, 900,000 doses of oral cholera vaccine are arriving, according to the World Health Organization. A mass vaccination campaign for Rohingya refugees is set to begin tomorrow. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
More than 500,000 Rohingya refugees who have fled violence in Myanmar since August 25th are at risk of getting cholera. Conditions in the squalid, overcrowded makeshift settlements in Cox's Bazar are perfect for an outbreak of this fatal disease. Cholera is spread by contaminated drinking water, unsafe food, and poor sanitary conditions. A spokesman for the World Health Organization, Tarek Jazarevich, says the planned oral vaccination campaign will prevent the worst from happening.
Target population is 650,000 people, every individual above age of one. More than 200 teams, vaccinators and volunteers, would carry out the campaign. Second round of the campaign is expected to be held after about 2 weeks, after the end of the first one.
Jazarevich says 250,000 children between the ages of 1 and 5 will be covered in this second round. He says Bangladeshi communities who are hosting the Rohingya refugees from Rakhine State also will be vaccinated against cholera. To ease conditions for the refugees, a spokesman for the International Organization for Migration, Joel Millman, says the Bangladesh government has allocated a further 1,000 acres of land. This is in addition to the 2,000 acres it already had made available in mid-September.
Officials plan to use the vast site to accommodate all the Rohingya refugees in Cox's Bazar, both new and old arrivals, in one settlement at close to 700,000 people. This will become the world's largest refugee camp.
Aid officials acknowledge the need for better housing for the refugees, but they say building a big camp is not the solution to the Rohingya crisis. They say the root causes must be addressed. Conditions must be created in Myanmar that would allow for the safe, voluntary return of the refugees. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
These are among some of the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. North Korea's Kim calls nuclear weapons program a treasured hoard. Analyst raises scenario of China's takeover of North Korea. Others have doubts. Indonesia police arrest 58 in raid on Jakarta gay sauna. Australians surrender 51,000 guns in nationwide amnesty. Teams race across Australia in World Solar Challenge. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and on our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Australians have handed in 51,000 weapons during the first national gun amnesty in more than 20 years. The government says the amnesty has helped to reduce the risk of firearms falling into the hands of terrorists and criminals. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Authorities in Australia believe the three-month gun amnesty that ran through September 30 has made the country safer. 51,461 firearms were surrendered in Australia's first no-questions-asked amnesty since a mass shooting in the state of Tasmania in 1996. A proliferation of illicit weapons and the potential impact on national security had prompted the government to urge Australians to hand in their firearms without fear of prosecution. Officials were worried that unwanted military-style rifles, pistols and shotguns could fall into the hands of extremists and criminal gangs. It's estimated that there are about 260,000 unregistered weapons in Australia, which has some of the world's toughest gun control measures. They include a 28-day waiting period, comprehensive background checks and a requirement to have a justifiable reason to own a firearm. There have been no mass shootings in Australia since the legislation was introduced. Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull says the measures are critical to Australian society.
Now, it's vitally important that we maintain our gun control laws. They are among the strictest in the world. We've seen the shocking tragedy in Las Vegas. The killer there had a collection of semi-automatic weapons, which a person in his position would simply not be able to acquire in Australia. So we have strict gun control laws. We don't take anything for granted.
Anyone found with an unregistered firearm in Australia now faces up to 14 years in prison or a heavy fine. The opposition Labor Party has called for the three-month gun amnesty to be extended and for life sentences to be handed down on criminals who smuggle firearms into Australia. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has promoted his younger sister to the country's secretive center of power. During the meeting of the powerful Central Committee, Kim Yo-jung was made an alternate member of the Politburo, the top decision-making body over which Kim Jong-un presides. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're very happy you're spending part of your day with us on VOA Asia. 1 week ago, a gunman opened fire from his Las Vegas, Nevada hotel window on thousands of concertgoers below. He killed 58 people in that crowd and wounded hundreds more, many whom remain in critical condition in the deadliest shooting in U.S. history. One of those killed as she watched the concert was 32-year-old Michelle Vo, the daughter of Vietnamese refugees who, like many, settled in California. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke about the reaction to the killing in the Vietnamese community with VOA Vietnamese reporter Minh Dao.
The massacre already is a big story, either in Vietnam or in the Vietnamese community here. Since we found out that there is a Vietnamese victim, the attention spiked up considerably from Vietnam as well as from here. We ran the story on the day we found out. And the response is just it's just through the roof.
What's being expressed?
They all say, you know, condolences to the family and to the community. And they felt personally touched because there's a Vietnamese victim in that shooting.
Now, you also investigated, I understand, how there might have been and there might still be any kind of reaction to Vietnamese businesses, such as Vietnamese traveling to the United States to visit Las Vegas or just overall. What did you find there?
I talked to a small business owner who offer a bus service, almost daily service to Las Vegas. He said that he mostly served Vietnamese tourists from Vietnam. And Las Vegas is a tour that nobody can pass up on. He told me that on the day of the shooting, he said that there was no slack off in the bookings and that he ran the service as normal.
Did that surprise you?
It did surprise me. But he said, you know, they are staying at a different hotel and his customers are not concerned at all.
Did you find out if his customers were Vietnamese living, I would take it, in the Southern California area or where bus service
the business,
would be from?
Yeah, the business is in California. He has bookings online, and he picks people up in the parking lot of the Orange County supermarket somewhere there. And he told me that his bus carry 15 passengers, and it's just back and forth. I talked to him before the first trip. He was going to pick them up, and he said he already had about 10 people on the bus.
You also told me that there has been some conversation, as there has been around the world and here in the United States, about the ability of this shooter to have the ammunition and guns and firepower that he had.
Mm-hmm. People are very concerned about the gun culture in America. I talked to a former judge, a U.S. citizen of Vietnamese descent, who was a judge, immigration judge in San Francisco. And he was very adamant that gun culture should change.
What is the gun culture, number one, in Vietnam, and number two, among the Vietnamese-American community?
In Vietnam, you have no civilian has access to guns. That's a no-no. Nobody's got guns except, you know, the authorities. So there's no gun culture as such. There was a war, and maybe people still think of Vietnam as a war, but nobody's got guns. So there was practically no mass shootings.
What about here among the expatriate
community? The Vietnamese here, I'm very surprised to find out that some do support gun ownership. I talked to the president of the Vietnamese community in Las Vegas, and he's a lawyer himself. And he said he, as a lawyer, he wants to protect the Constitution and the Second Amendment, and that he's for gun ownership. However, it's got to be responsible. And he's against, you know, automatic weapons in the hands of the civilians. There are people who are against, adamantly against the gun ownership. I've talked to maybe 5 people, and about 4 people are against. And all of them are against automatic weapons. Although some say that, you know, I'm for and against, for, you know, for protection of my family, but against, you know, the weapons of mass destruction that shouldn't be in the hand of the normal people.
A microcosm of how the whole population
seems
to be. Yeah.
Exactly.
Min, thank you very much. I greatly
thank
appreciate
you,
it.
Thank you, Ira.
VOA Vietnamese reporter Min Dao speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. You're listening to VOA Asia. The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. This news alert from VOA Asia. The Philippine Justice Secretary says a Filipino suspected in a thwarted terrorist plot targeting New York subway in Times Square will be extradited to the United States. Russell Salek was arrested in the Philippines in April in an alleged plan to carry out the attacks. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories and great features. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the Chinese Basketball Association is on tour in the United States, with teams playing against U.S. professional squads. Kala Yu from VOA's Mandarin service was at a recent game here in the Washington area and tells more in this report narrated by Brian Allen.
Washington, D.C.'s main indoor sports arena sits right in the middle of Chinatown, an area that doesn't always feel quite as Chinese as its name suggests. But earlier this week, it could have been Guangzhou. The Long Lions from the Chinese Basketball Association were in town for an exhibition game against the NBA's Washington Wizards.
They actually play well. They play well. Like I said, we respect all of our opponents. You know, they're professionals just like we are, you know, so we take that to heart. You know, we come in focused and ready to go because we can't take them lightly.
With the NBA season beginning later this month, teams are playing preseason exhibition contests to help their players get into shape and to win fans in non-NBA cities, even in places as far away as China.
It's a big fan base, so, you know, this is probably get new fans. That's the amazing part. But, you know, just get out there, play basketball, have fun.
For the visiting players, these games offer a unique opportunity to get some exposure to a new audience and to size themselves up against their American counterparts.
I think it's very different watching NBA games than actually playing against an NBA team. This game is very helpful to our team. We can learn from the speed they move and the stability of their shooting. Our players should be clearer about how they should train from now on.
The Long Lions are one of two Chinese Basketball Association teams playing friendly games against NBA teams this month. Former NBA player Tyler Hansbrough is one of two Americans on the Long Lions.
It's a different game because the NBA, there's a lot more spacing in the three-point lines farther out. But, you know, it's competitive. The China League is growing. You see a lot of good players coming over here. You know, they're working really hard. So, you know, I'm excited about it.
The game wasn't part of any larger competition, luckily for the Long Lions, who lost 126-96. But they weren't expected to win. They were supposed to make a step towards improving Chinese basketball and growing the visibility of American and Chinese basketball in each other's countries. And for these fans, that was good enough.
We usually support the Wizards, but since there's a Chinese team visiting, we hope both teams play well.
For producer Gary Butterworth, I'm Brian Allen, VOA News, Washington.
This news alert from VOA Asia. More arrests are expected in the case involving the alleged rape of a national diver at the National Aquatic Center in Malaysia's Bukit Jalil. The Inspector General of Police says a total of 18 people have been questioned so far as investigators review surveillance camera recordings. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, beautiful art and facades adorn buildings in many cities. Some are carved by hand, while others are manufactured. Now a smart robot is creating large-scale art to transform public places. And as we hear from VOA's Deborah Block, the droid gives new meaning to handmade art.
It may look like a giant drill, but this robot is pre-programmed to cut molds for large-scale art. Urban Arts Projects in Brisbane, Australia, is designing art for buildings in the city.
In the last 10 years, we've probably built 10 to 15 large-scale facades for buildings. All have been manufactured in China for the Australian market. This year, we've onshored our first large-scale facade.
This facade pattern maker welcomes the robotic help.
I've been doing this for 40 years, and the vast majority of the work we do is just tedium. The robot will get to do all that for us.
The droid is part of an $8 million design robotics research project in Australia to develop vision-enabled, adaptable robots to make unique pieces. Right now, humans tell the robot what to do. But within 5 years, artificial intelligence will likely allow the machine to see what it's carving on its own and make changes without human involvement.
It's not just about identifying where something is and picking it up and placing it somewhere else. It's actually seeing the shape and working with that shape. That's the big difference.
Instead of people, robots like this may one day get credit for their art. Deborah Block, VOA News, Washington.
Scientists say bionic eyes are not too far away, but until they become widely available, many people around the world will still have to continue living with the stigma of wearing prosthetic eyes. Still, highly trained technicians can manufacture prosthetic eyes hardly distinguishable from normal ones, making the lives of their patients much more pleasant. VOA's George Pudich takes a closer look.
12-year-old Haley Moore was born with one underdeveloped eye, so she has been wearing a prosthesis since she was 3.
It just feels like it's not even there, like a normal eye.
Prosthetic eyes used to be made of glass, but today they are made of much lighter acrylic, which does not shatter when accidentally dropped and can be molded to a very specific shape. Special implants in the back of the eye are attached to the eye muscle, so the prosthesis can move, making it almost indistinguishable from the normal eye. Once the impression of the eye socket is made, the ocularist slowly matches the artificial eye to the natural one. All the details are painted by hand, since a perfectly matching prosthesis can change lives.
Just getting by on normal life, as well as finding jobs and employment. It can be very hard for them too, so they get a bit ostracized from society.
Gillen, who works in Perth, Australia, says it takes 4 years of training to be able to create the perfect match. There are no courses for ocularists, so they transfer their skill to apprentices interested in learning. Soon, Gillen will start training a group of ocularists from Rwanda, Papua New Guinea, and Nepal. Yet technology is advancing, so it is already possible to digitally print the features directly onto the prosthesis.
Eventually people might grow their own eyes back. Don't know, with stem cells, so...
But for the immediate future, artificial eyes will still be the best solution for many. George Pudich, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia, and some have been listening in Tainan, Taiwan, via the voice of Chungrung, Star Radio FM 88.3 at Chungrung Christian University in Tainan, Taiwan. We thank you and everyone who's been listening today. Don't forget, you can also find us on iTunes and SoundCloud. If you can't hear us on your station for some reason, or you can't find us somewhere on the internet, you know we're always on VOA Asia Facebook. We also stream on our website, voanews.com. Our director today is Tracy Carter, engineer Aydin Utku, managing editor Diane Gao, Ali Ogden, Ira Melman, David Bird on our VOA Asia team. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a great day.